Agenda item number five, Virginia Electric and Power Company. Mr. Woodward, good morning.
Members of the commission, welcome new members. Welcome back, Mr. Tankard. Good to see you. We're going to see if I can get this thing started. Virginia Electric and Power Company is requesting authorization to cross the Rappahannock River with a new 115-kilovolt transmission line immediately downstream of the Route 3 Norris Bridge between Middlesex and Lancaster counties. The existing line will be removed from the old bridge, and the new line will be suspended on 10 new towers independent of the bridge with a fender system to be installed around the two towers flanking the navigation channel. At the time that we wrote up the staff evaluation, the project was protested by a citizen in Urbana, and now a lot more people have come forth both for and against the project. Those letters and emails are at the back of your evaluation. We didn't have time to get them in the evaluation proper. Vicinity map, mouth of the Rappahannock River, Stingray Point, Windmill Point, Route 3 Bridge, Norris Bridge, between Middlesex and Lancaster. A little closer view. A little history. This project was baler ground underneath the existing power line and underneath the existing bridge. The Marine Resources Commission lacks the authority to authorize any public or private encroachment over public oyster ground, baler ground. Therefore, VEPCO had to go to the General Assembly to have an area underneath, like a right-of-way, established where the new line would go across the river. That was done approved this past March. These are the application drawings. There was quite a series of them. I tried to go through and just present the ones that'll give us the most information. I don't know if there's as much glare on that for everybody else as there is for me, but again, project location, overlaying over a bathymetric chart. You can see depths here in the river are on the order of 60 feet at the deepest part in the channel. An additional chart showing depths. There's a shallow bar coming off the Middlesex side, and likewise a shallow bar as you enter into Lancaster. And this is the beginning of a bunch of project drawings. I apologize, the detail is hard to pick up because they were reduced and then manipulated to fit on the slide, but hopefully I can answer any questions you may have about the actual detail. This is the project as it leaves Gray's Point on the Middlesex side. These are the new towers, 1, 2, 3, 4 as it goes out. As we get to the middle of the river, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 as we go across. This is the existing navigation channel at the highest part of the bridge. This represents the fender system that is to be installed to protect those towers from any boat collision. And now as we descend into Lancaster, the remainder of the towers as it comes ashore on the Whitestone side in Lancaster County. These are real hard to see even full size. But essentially a plan view drawing showing the existing bridge, the proposed line, the reason you see three lines, this lower line, it's my understanding, dependent upon ambient temperatures, how much electricity is passing through the lines, they expand and contract, so you might have the line a little higher, a little lower on any given day. This is the navigation channel. I can get my little pointer to work here. That's the exaggerated view of the superstructure of the bridge. Again, the line coming down into Lancaster. This represents the three pile configuration for some of the towers. When the application first came in, there was both a three pile and a four pile configuration, the four pile being in kind of an H frame format. Those are the piles that are driven into the river bottom. They are capped with concrete. This would represent the surface of the river, mean sea level, I would assume. These caps are established on top of the support piles, and the towers themselves are built upon those caps. This is the three pile system. Let me go back one. There are three pile design and two pile design towers. The four pile H pile design was abandoned or eliminated in an effort to minimize or reduce the total number of piles for the 10 towers as they go across the bridge. And while I'm on that, let me go to some. The line will be suspended a minimum of 136 feet above mean high water at the navigation channel. It's my understanding this was per Coast Guard recommendations or approved by Coast Guard recommendations. The existing line is at 122 feet, more or less, knowing the line can migrate a little bit. The invert of the bridge is at 110 feet, or that's what's approved by the Coast Guard and shows on navigation charts. So throughout that whole area of the main navigation channel, the line is never below the invert of the bridge. Some detail, this would be the channel the tower on the south side of the navigation channel. This is looking north, fender system, and there would be the similar type design on the far side, on the Lancaster side. Again, typical detail of that fender system. This would be it in profile, piles driven, and batter boards or fenders attached to those batter boards, much like you'd see in typical navigation channel configuration. The piles for the fender system are 42-inch diameter hollow fiber piles. The piles for the towers themselves are 66-inch hollow concrete piles. All of the piles are to be impact-driven, pounded in by impact hammer. More detail. So this is the two-pile configuration for the tower. Did I miss anything on this one? That's more detail of the three-pile support system. And this is more detail. Ladder clips. Again, this is a bit overkill. Okay. I'm standing with my back on the Middlesex shoreline, looking north. Norris Bridge to your left. This is the first tower in the river as the power line leaves Middlesex County. You can see currently there are three towers on this side, four towers on the other side for a total of seven towers. The proposal now is for 10 towers, and the additional towers are needed to remove the line from the bridge. Here's the line attached to the bridge. You can see the bridge needs to be painted. Everything on the bridge has been painted except for this central superstructure. Both sides of the bridge have now been painted by, I forget the company, but this remains to be painted hopefully at some point in time in the future. Now we're descending into Lancaster. Line comes off the bridge, back onto towers, a series of four towers as it comes into Lancaster County. This is called High Bank, or it was called High Bank when it was developed some time ago. Now I'm standing at High Bank with my back to the condos, looking south, and you can see the four towers as they go and approach the bridge, comes back off on the side. Middlesex County. Stantec and VEPCO worked together. I'm not sure who developed this artist rendering, but there's a bridge out there, and there's also the upper photograph represents the existing condition. The lower photograph represents the proposed condition. From 5 miles away, it's difficult to tell whatever distance this is. As you get closer, the existing bridge, the proposed towers. One more, going upriver, looking backwards. One more from the Lancaster side, looking south. And I believe this might be the last one. As you get closer, obviously, they're more visible. And you can see how the bridge looks nice and white here. It's all been painted, and the superstructure has not. Not recently. This is standing at Grays Point Campground. You see the trailers here, looking southeast, looking east-southeast. Existing condition, proposed towers. I'm going to leave this slide up, and I can go back to any of the other slides as you deem helpful. As I stated earlier, the project is protested by Emily Davies, a resident of Urbana in Middlesex County. Ms. Davies' letter of opposition states the project poses significant negative aesthetic and possibly ecological impact on the project area and environs. Staff and the applicant have provided Ms. Davies with additional information in attempt to address her concerns, but she maintains her objection to the project. Again, when this was written, we had one letter of opposition on file. Now you will see there are several more in the back. I lost count. In addition to the protest by Ms. Davies, on July 23, 2015, staff received a resolution from the Lancaster County Board of Supervisors from their June 25th meeting. Their resolution, you can see on tab item 'Whereas, now therefore be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors of Lancaster County hereby strongly supports Dominion Virginia Power's proposal to replace the overhead transmission line across the Rappahannock River. And be it further resolved that the Board of Supervisors of Lancaster County of Lancaster hereby strongly supports the installation, operation, and maintenance of a new underwater transmission line rather than a new overhead transmission line. And be it finally resolved that a copy of the resolution goes to Dominion Power, State Corporation Commission, and the County of Middlesex. We just received this last week. We were unaware of it until last week. Prior to formalizing our staff evaluation, we did receive a letter of support signed by Senator Ryan T. McDougall and Delegates Margaret Ranson and Keith Hodges, citing the need for the project. That's in your packet as well. The new transmission line will cross over two private oyster planting ground leases, and VEPCO has an agreement signed with the oyster ground leaseholders that they do not object. There will not be any towers in the private oyster ground, but the line will span over top of those two private oyster grounds on the Middlesex side. And the area of Baylor has been removed underneath the power line right of way per the General Assembly. Virginia Institute of Marine Science is recommending a time of year restriction from February 15th to June 30th of any year to minimize acoustic impacts on anadromous fish and Atlantic sturgeon, which is associated with the driving of hollow concrete or fiber piles. Some years ago, I believe it was at the, I first became aware of it with the Woodrow Wilson Bridge project over the Potomac River in Alexandria. Huge project. A large fish kill that was traced back to the acoustic impact from the pile driving. Hopefully we've learned something from then. But anyway, DIMS is recommending that, which is a standard time of year restriction in Virginia for anadromous species. The Game Department also recommends that same time of year and further recommends coordination with NOAA regarding the potential for impacts to Atlantic sturgeon. It's my understanding that a sturgeon was found in the Rappahannock back in the 60s. I don't know that Vim's trawl survey has found anything since then. I don't know. We have very little data on that. Vim's could address that if necessary. The Game Department further documents the existence of a nest box for the state-threatened peregrine falcon, which is atop the bridge. They recommend that no work within 600 feet of the nest box be conducted from February 15th to July 15th, which is the nesting season, to protect the species from harm. The Game Department currently checks that nest box. They see whether or not it's active. They see whether or not there's eggs in the nest. If there are eggs in the nest, they track the chicks as to when they fledge. They also have relocated the chicks to western part of the state where they're more normally found. But that's left to be seen if the nest is active from year to year. But the Game Department tracks that. And if it is active, they're recommending that time of year and coordination with them prior to any construction commencing within 600 feet of the bridge. And that would include a couple of the towers right at the channel. The nest box is right on the superstructure, somewhere on the superstructure. Department of Conservation and Recreation notes the project is within the Norris Bridge Conservation Site due to the history of nesting by the falcon. They recommend the same time of year restriction as the Game Department and coordination with the Game Department as they are the regulatory authority for management and protection of threatened and endangered species in Virginia. Army Corps of Engineers indicates the project will qualify for a nationwide permit 12, provided the project adheres to the time of year restriction. Where can I sleep? Sorry about that. Provided the project adheres to that same February 15th to June 30th time of year restriction for anadromous species, the Corps has indicated the project will meet their criteria for the nationwide 12, their nationwide 12 permit. The new line across the river is to be suspended from 10 towers, supported by a total of 24 hollow concrete piles, 66-inch diameter. And the fender system will be supported by a total of 46 hollow fiber piles, 42 inches in diameter. These are the direct impacts to the riverbed associated with this project. All piles are to be driven with an impact hammer. As I stated previously, this method, when using hollow piles, has been found to have adverse acoustic-related impacts to fisheries resources. Accordingly, the time of year restriction for the anadromous fish that are known to transit this area during that time frame. About a week ago, we received a request from VEPCO to waive or relax the time of year restriction due to the hardship it would pose to getting the project installed. We had a conference call with the Corps of Engineers, National Marine Fisheries, Game Department, DCR, the applicant, Stantec, their agent. If I missed anybody, I apologize. There were a lot of different options talked about as to how these acoustic impacts or the impacts associated with constructing the bridge could be further mitigated. No consensus was reached, and we continue to, well, you'll see. I don't want to spoil my summary and recommendation, keep you on the edge of your seat. Just for your information, there is a technology whereby the concrete pile is set in place and what's known as a bubble curtain is lowered around the piling that bubbles, air is pumped into the bottom of the curtain, bubbles go up between the curtain and the pile to dampen any acoustic effect coming out from those concrete piles. In 60 feet of water with about a 4 or 5 knot current, you know, nobody was real confident that, you know, that particular methodology would work. It's been shown to be somewhat effective in the shallow water areas. And again, there were some other proposals, one of which is what the applicant and agent are calling a ramp-up method, where they would tap the hammer, and then maybe they would tap it twice, and maybe the fish will scatter, and maybe then they go. It's called a ramp-up method. It's been used in the past. How effectively, I don't know that there's been a study. But that's what they've offered to do, in addition to bubble curtains and so forth. Again, no consensus was reached during that conference call, so we're sticking by our time of year restriction recommendation.
Oh, you just spoiled the surprise.
Well, there's others. I don't want to freak you out too much. Okay, the need for the project, this is now my summary and recommendation. I'm just going to read this verbatim. It's drone on. The need for the project has been established in the General Assembly action to facilitate the review and issuance of a permit at this location supports that need. Chapter 377, Acts of General Assembly, Acts of Assembly. Staff understands the desire to separate the power line from the bridge and has evaluated the alternatives analysis provided regarding other installation methodology, horizontal direction bore. They go in on the upland, drill all the way under the riverbed with no direct impact to the riverbed, and pop up on the other side, or jet plowing as they did on the Piankatank River, where they directionally drill from the upland, pop up in the riverbed with a diver, plow it into the river bottom, back under the wetlands and up on the other side. But consequently, we believe that the purpose, need, and proposed construction methodology for this project are reasonable based on the alternatives analysis provided in the application. There's currently a transmission line across the river in this location. Staff does not believe the new line and additional support towers would represent a significant aesthetic or ecological impact once installed. Concrete piles have been shown to provide habitat for encrusting organisms such as filter feeders like oysters and mussels, and the fisheries resources that may rely upon them or feed upon them. Staff understands the need by VEPCO to maintain electrical reliability to the Northern Neck and its citizens, but remains concerned over the potential adverse impact to sensitive fisheries resources resulting from the driving of hollow piles, concrete, or fiber in this case. Staff appreciates the efforts by the applicant to mitigate these impacts with the measures that have been used in the past with some degree of success. However, we continue to recommend the time of year restriction, the standard anadromous species time of year restriction of February 15th to June 30th for the driving of piles. They would be allowed to do other construction along the project. They could build the towers on top of the tower supports once those piles have been driven, but no pile driving during the time of year. Regarding the falcon, staff recommends a time of year restriction from February 15th through July 15th of any year for any construction within 600 feet of the active nest. If the nest is found to be inactive or the chicks have fledged or have been relocated as confirmed by the game department, staff would be willing to waive the time of year restriction for that species administratively in the area of the project, with your concurrence, obviously. Accordingly, after evaluating the merits of the project and considering all the factors contained in 28.2.1205 of the Code of Virginia, staff is recommending approval of the project with a time of year restriction of February 15th to June 30th for anadromous fish and February 15th to July 15th for the peregrine falcon. However, staff would require authorization to administratively waive the peregrine falcon restriction. Only the falcon restriction, if the nest is found by the game department to be inactive, the chicks are gone, or have been relocated safely out of harm's way. In addition, we're recommending a royalty in the amount of $30,960 for the encroachment of the transmission line crossing over 10,320 feet of state-owned submerged land at the prescribed rate of $3 per linear foot. That's for the line, and it's actually two lines because there's a power line and a neutral line, I believe. But it's one circuit. In addition, we recommend a royalty in the amount of $33,160 for the physical encroachment of the tower foundations over the submerged state lands of the Commonwealth at a prescribed rate of $2 per square foot, making the total royalty $64,120. I would be happy to try to answer any questions if you have them. Both the applicant and the agent are here, as are people in opposition and possibly for the project.
Thank you, Mr. Woodward. Are there questions from the commission of staff?
I have a
Mr. Neal.
The staff's recommendation has not changed since the more recent letters of protest, including the Board of Supervisors.
That's correct.
All right. And then you stated that staff evaluated the alternatives, basically submerging the cable. What was staff's conclusion about the alternatives?
Cost, maintenance of the line underwater, and I would rather have VEPCO kind of explain all of that, but I think those are the two main factors: installation cost, maintenance cost, and I don't know about safety. It would be plowed into the bottom, potentially. I would like VEPCO to.
I guess my question is staff's evaluation of the differences in our resources. So basically, does staff have a preferred method as far as the effect to the environment?
We evaluated the alternatives analysis, and we evaluated this proposal. I think in a perfect world, we would tell VEPCO to bury it in Middlesex and go under the river and pop up in Lancaster. But we don't do that at the staff level. So we have evaluated the current proposal for the 10 towers, and some of that is in light of the existing line and so forth, but that's correct. I will say, thank you for bringing it up, we heard as of, I believe, yesterday afternoon, VEPCO is now accepting the time of year restriction, the full February 15th to June 30th time of year restriction. They understand there is no consensus on mitigation, so therefore they are accepting the staff recommendation of that time of year restriction.
Thank you. Any other questions from the commission? Mr. Zedrin.
I understood you to say that these structures of towers also provide some benefit to the environment by having habitat for fish to and other shellfish and finfish to use that as some sort of estuary to develop. Is that right?
Well, that might be rose-colored glasses, but yes. The bridge itself is a nursery. All the concrete piles supporting the bridge, anybody that's been by there on low tide or dove it, are loaded with oysters. You know, concrete it's not a preferred substrate, but it's been used in the past for artificial reefs. The decking on the Norris Bridge actually went some years ago into a reef site further down on Mosquito Point on the Lancaster side. So concrete is a relatively inert substance that encrusting organisms will attach to, that those towers will be located in an area that now is sand or mud bottom. And it's also a vertical substrate. It's not just on the bottom. So that was our logic behind that.
Ms. Hurst.
Excuse me, Jay. There was a suggestion in the packet possibly of the transmission line being hung or attached underneath the existing bridge. Was that alternative evaluated either by staff or the applicant?
Yes, both. A big driving force behind this project is to get the line off the bridge. So when they need to maintain the line, they don't interrupt the bridge. When they need to maintain the bridge, they don't interrupt the line. From an engineering standpoint, I think VEPCO responded that manholes would need to be installed on the bridge. Any kind of maintenance would stop traffic. It's a two-lane bridge. So we did not believe that was see that as a supportable.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the commission? Mr. Tankard.
One more question for me. You mentioned there are currently 7 towers and there will be 10 in the future, but you also mentioned that underneath the water there would be an increase in pilings. What's that increase like?
I would have to go, bear with me when I, these are creosote poles, first of all, and there's not a lot of encrusting on creosote. So in this particular tower, it looks like there's six support piles over which the tower is constructed. I assume the tower that replaces this one or will be either a two or three concrete pile structure, mm-hmm. as with the one in the background and so on. I honestly don't have the total number of creosote piles that will be replaced by a total of 24 concrete piles for the towers, 42 hollow fiber piles, smaller, 46, 42 inches in diameter. And from what I know of those fiber piles, they are also inert, non-toxic. Perhaps the applicant or agent can speak to the actual makeup of those fiber piles.
Thank you. Ms. Haney.
I just, before we begin or open it up to the public, I'm going to have to abstain from voting on this issue due to a conflict of interest. The company I work for has already been involved and may be involved with the contractors in the future.
Thanks. Any other questions from the commission? Mr. Watkinson.
Just want to add, in response to Jay's comments and further coordination with them regarding the bubble curtains, the ramp-up technique for driving the pilings, VIMS has suggested that it be a permit condition, and we concur that use the shallow, in the shallow waters, I think it's 25 feet and less, use the bubble curtains all the time throughout the year, and also use the ramp-up technique for driving the pilings all the time, whether you're outside the time of year restriction or not. And we would recommend that that be included as conditions in the permit as well.
Have you discussed that with VEPCO?
They were aware of the BIMS comments. I don't know if they totally agree with that or not.
I guess we'll find out in a minute. Any other questions from the commission? Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
In my evaluation. Somebody didn't catch the edit, I think.
That came in last week after these were sent out. So.
Is the applicant represented or present? Well, represented. Could you please come forward, sir? Is there anybody else that you'd like to have testify on this matter?
It just depends on the type of questioning.
Okay. I need.
Sorry
about that.
And I do.
Okay. If you both stand up, I'll swear you in at the same time. Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Will you please state your names for the record?
Yeah, my name is Wes Keck, K-E-C-K. I'm the project manager for this project. Well, thank you, Mr. Woodward, for the presentation.
Greg Matthey, I'm the communications manager for the project.
Thank you both.
All right, I will be brief. presentation, you can see. We've covered a lot of what we'd like to say, but we'll go over this relatively quickly, and then I'll turn it over to Greg to talk about our community outreach. But this is the 65 line, what we call the 65 line. It connects Whitestone, Lancaster substations for Dominion to Harmony Village. Harmony Village substation is at the Route 3 and 17 intersection. So it's a critical piece of infrastructure for Dominion, this river crossing. As said, it exists. This is what we call a reliability project. Reliability is simply the customers are important everywhere, including the Northern Net, and this crossing is critical to serve the customers on both sides of the river. Replacing aging infrastructure. I always look at it in some of my previous jobs as a lot of this stuff was installed. This one in particular was installed in 1962. It was installed about 1 year after the bridge opened in 1961, from what our records show. And in this, what we call a contaminated or saltwater environment, it's has a rough time out there with rust and corrosion. So it's been a maintenance headache for us. I think VDOT would share that feeling also on the maintenance with the bridge and the line together. So increased reliability and operational efficiencies. When we take this opportunity to remove it from the bridge, we would upgrade the line. We would put it to today's standards. Like, as you can imagine, anything over 50 years old was built one way. Times change, and we've increased our standards. Electrical and clearances have increased also. So we would meet all those upgrades. It helps the restoration time. Right now, there are 7 structures in the water, as mentioned, and 14 bridge attachments. Those bridge attachments have been very problematic because working from the bridge, we have to close a lane. We work great with VDOT. VDOT works great with us, but that has been problematic for the communities on both sides of the river and from VDOT. When the painting was done, we had to take an outage on that line off and on for close to a year. What that does is everybody still has electricity, but another failure on either side would knock out close to 19,000 customers. So we're at risk when we have that situation. We're attached to the bridge. It's much more reliable when it's independent of the bridge. The safety, it's the same thing on the safety side. This is a and Dominion crews. When they were painting the bridge, one of the tarps got away and got into the line. It was very problematic. Took the line out, and luckily someone did not get hurt, so that worked out well. But it's a safety issue being that close. We have significant records showing that people throw things off the bridge at the lines, like broken insulators and things like that as they're driving across. That's the safety and the operational and the liability. So it's basically, like I said, a reliability project. And real quick, this is my last slide before I turn it over to Greg Matthew. The project considerations. Environmental, the first challenge I gave our project engineer in sitting here was, can you cross the wetlands? Can we get across the wetlands without penetrating the wetlands? And he came back and looked at it at high level and said he could. The next question was, could we cross the oyster leases or span over the oyster leases? As we're evaluating the overhead versus underground. And the answer was that he could. We looked at the subaquatic vegetation and what that would take on a plowed in or jetted line for submersible. That would be very impactful and invasive. Although some consider temporary, I think it could be, you know, years or even decades till it came back forward. I talked about the operational efficiencies, restoration times, overhead versus underground. We're an overhead company. Typically, we know how to work that. We're very good at it. If a line came down, which was very rare, we could get it up in a day or two. With a submarine cable or a pipe-type cable under the water, we're talking months, weeks to months of restoration time to find the fault. Across a 2-mile line, you have to, there's equipment, radar equipment that finds it. You have to send divers down, pull it up onto a barge. You have to cut the pipe. You have to splice the cable. It's very, very time consuming. That whole time, people have power. I don't want to mislead you, but it's very risky because you don't have that extra line now in service to serve the Northern Neck and the other communities. Lifespan, I mentioned that simply because when you're comparing overhead to underground, our books and our experience shows that it's about twice as long for overhead. We get about 60-year life out of overhead conductors and towers, and the technology on cable, you know, some's a little more, some's a little less, but it's about 30. So the equivalency for a lifetime analysis is about 2 times. Use of existing right-of-way, what I mean by that is that on land, which I know is not the purview of the MRC, but right now we're not making any changes on land with an overhead crossing. There would be no changes, no additional takings. With an underground crossing, there would be additional land required for terminal stations at both ends and to get the pipe laid out on both ends. And like we've said many times here, it's existing overhead lines. So going back overhead, we think, is the best solution here. And it's adjacent to the Norris Bridge. And then cost is always a factor for the ratepayer and for Dominion. That's all I have. I'm going to turn it over to Greg Matthew, and then we'll be available for any questions.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the time and your consideration. To date, we've been happy with the community engagement and their willingness to listen about the project and learn more about our techniques. We first presented this to the counties back in September of 2014. When we first initially knew that the project was approved and moving forward, we were still engineering the line and still doing our due diligence, but at that time we felt it necessary to bring it to the attention of both counties. At that time, also in the fall of 2014, we knew that the oyster beds were taken into consideration, so we met with the leaseholders to discuss the project, explain to them our impact or what we were thinking from an engineering standpoint, and had a good conversation with the two leaseholders. Fast forward to when we knew this project needed to move forward and our permit application needed to be submitted, we sent out public notification to about 70 parcels, which constituted a half a mile on either side of the line on both county sides, 500 feet inland for our notification. This is not typical. Usual notification on any transmission line is anywhere from 500 feet to 1,000 feet of the center line, but given that this is a water crossing and there's no one quite adjacent to the property in the middle of the river, we wanted to make sure that folks on either side of the shoreline knew about the project. We had a good conversation with the owner of Grays Point and a few good conversations with some of the other citizens who called in or concerned citizens that were challenging the permit. TED, appreciate the community involvement to date. The Board of Supervisors in both counties have been good to work with, good questions when we presented to them at their board meetings back in May, and we welcome the opportunity today to answer any more questions.
Any questions from the Commission for either gentleman? I do have a question. You've looked at alternatives. The hydraulic drilling method here, which apparently some residents would prefer, have you established the cost estimate on that versus what the current project cost would be for this?
Yeah, on the hydraulic side, what we're looking at when you compare life cycle cost and everything was about 4 to 5 times this cost.
What's the cost of this project?
$30 million.
So it would add $80 million in cost to this project?
Yes.
Or more. Okay.
Or more.
Any other?
If I can add one thing, the lease cost was a submarine cable and not the hydraulic. And that would have been about 3 to 4 times more. It was less cost to go submarine cable. But Dominion has never done a submarine cable. It's been done at this voltage. It's been done in the country, but all of our cables that we have underwater are pipe type cables, which is a hydraulic drilling method.
Any other questions from the Commission? Thank you, sir. This is a public hearing. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to be heard in favor of this project? In favor of this project. I would imagine there might be somebody who wishes to testify against this project. Could I have a show of hands of how many people would like to testify against this project? Terrific. Who wants to be first? I need to swear you in, ma'am. Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, self you God? Thank you. Please state your name for the record.
Emily Davies. Thank you, Commissioner Bull, and thank you, board members, for this opportunity to testify. I really appreciate it, and I also appreciate the work that that Bedco and wherever Jay Woodward went to help me through this process. And I do support BEPCO's sincere attempts to provide a sustainable and reliable power supply to those of us that live on the Northern Neck and Middle Peninsula. Although I do support replacement of the existing power line, I'm concerned about the lack of transparency of this process and that it's minimized public involvement and as a result has eliminated the need for further discussion of project alternatives. I'm the only person that wrote a written objection to this whole project, and my understanding is without that there wouldn't even be a hearing. And I'm retired, I have time. I was reading the Southside Sentinel, and there was a 2-inch tall by 1-inch wide public notice of this whole entire project. No pictures, no, very little description. So I think transparency could use some work. More specifically, and coming at it from the regulatory perspective, I object to the conclusion in the permit application that the project will not significantly grade aesthetic value. I agree that that's a subjective measure, but nobody's done the work to entitle someone to say that in a formal permit application. The current towers are wooden, and there are a lot less of them. Last week, I saw the artist's rendering of the proposed project. They're taller, they're silver, there's a whole bunch of lattice work, and, you know, in my humble opinion, it's significant. In the permit application, findings of no significant impact to things like water quality, fish, waterfowl, threatened and endangered species, historic and cultural resources are substantiated by data within the permit application, but there's no such data for visual impacts. By their nature, visual impact data can't be generated just by a desktop data search. Therefore, I respectfully suggest that the approval process for this permit be suspended pending completion of an environmental impact assessment, specifically as related to visual impacts. Such an assessment should include transparent, open discussion with a statistically significant cross-section of the community of the people who will be impacted. And that's not just limited to the landowners within a half mile of the bridge. The community would include those landowners, but also residents, part-timers, recreational and commercial users of the Rappahannock River within the project's viewshed. I can see it from Robinson's Creek where I live, and I know you can see it from the bay. So to me, that would be the study area. In order to be unbiased, those kind of discussions should be conducted by an experienced third party and should be limited in scope to a fairly depicted artist's rendering of the project. Alternatives shouldn't be included in those discussions. If it is determined that visual impacts are indeed determined to be significant, then mitigation should be pursued by VEPCO in the form of looking at alternatives. I close by challenging VEPCO in partnership with VMRC and the Rappahannock River community to approach this significant, permanent, highly visible project proactively and with improved transparency and maybe a little bit of creativity. By viewing it as a community service opportunity, maybe together we can preserve the tranquil beauty of the river that we all love. It's the 21st century. We can do better than this, I think. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions from the commission? Thank you, Matt. Next. Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, Commission, Jason Bellows, Lancaster County Board of Supervisors, Chairman.
Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Bellows.
Thank you. I think I sent some previous comments, and you've heard gotten the resolution from our board, but I'd just like to add a few more things to that. The residents of Lancaster County and the Board of Supervisors are vehemently opposed to the proposal by VEPCO and Dominion Power to build large towers to upgrade the transmission line across the Rappahannock River. These new towers will not only ruin the beautiful view eastward toward the bay, they will add increased hazards to navigation and will have a negative impact on the local environment and wildlife. The Lancaster County Board of Supervisors unanimously approved a resolution at their June meeting opposing these towers in favor of some alternative, either using an underwater line or upgrading and maintaining as is attached to the bridge. On behalf of the residents of Lancaster County and the Board of Supervisors, I request that you deny or table Dominion Power's VEPCO's permit request until a thorough and open investigation of alternatives can be explored. Please vote to protect the pristine environment, the abundant wildlife, and the rights of the local stakeholders to have voice in this process. I'd also like to present to the board a petition that's been circulated and has 185 signatures of opposition to this proposal.
Thank you. We're going to need to keep this.
Okay, that's your copy.
Thank you.
And that's all I have. Are there any questions?
Any questions from the commission?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Tankard.
I wanted to ask about the need. Does the Board of Supervisors believe, like VEPCO, that there's a need for increased reliability of their electric grid in this?
Yes, sir, we do, and that was part of our resolution. We do agree that the upgrade is necessary, but we do not agree that the alternatives have been thoroughly vetted. It wasn't just until 2 months that our board found out about this project. And it wasn't something that we really had input in. They just showed up and said, here's the plan, and whether it was just sort of a presentation. It wasn't like they were presenting to the board that we had any input into it. And I think that a project of this scope that has such an impact on the local communities that the local boards and supervisors should have some say in this process. and that these alternatives should be more thoroughly vetted. I also have spoken to a number of members of the Middlesex County Board of Supervisors, and they feel the same way.
Mr. Ballard.
Can you comment on some of the maintenance and traffic issues that VEPCO referred to? Do you see that being a problem?
In the 30 years that I've lived here, I've lived my entire life in the county. I've never heard of an incident where they've had to close the bridge to work on those lines or having any traffic issues. I've never heard of anything of those sorts or ever experienced any of those things. When they came to our board, they just threw out a number that would cost $100 million to put it underwater, but researching that, Dominion Power and the General Assembly, I believe it was in 2006, commissioned a JLARC study to look into burying these lines, and you can actually get that report online and read through it, and it talks about the cost of burying these lines and why they do it, and some of the reasons why they do it is that they bury them near airports. We have Hummel Airport right near there. They bury them across scenic views because people don't want to look at those lines. Those were two things that were pointed out in the study commissioned by the General Assembly and Dominion Power.
Any other questions from the commission? Thank you, Mr. Billis.
Thank you for your time.
Appreciate your attendance. Someone else wish to testify?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. You hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you, God?
I do.
Please state your name for the record.
Frank Pleva, Pierre Olivier. I'm the Lancaster County Administrator. First of all, I just want to thank Mr. Watkinson for getting you the board's resolution. I apologize for the tardiness because, quite candidly, we're not aware of the hearing till the end of last week. And when I checked with my colleague in Middlesex, they weren't aware of the hearing at all. I mean, they are now, but they weren't at that time. We did meet on the staff level and a couple supervisors, as the gentleman pointed out, from, I call it, Virginia Power. VEPCO is what my parents called it when I grew up in the 60s. And we did meet with them and talk about the project. And as Mr. Bellows has pointed out in the resolution points out, the board conceptually is in favor of the project in terms of upgrading reliability, efficiency, and safety of that power service between the two counties. I've worked and lived in the Northern Neck, Middle Peninsula, and the Eastern Shore, and reliable electric service has been an issue in all these areas. So there's no debate, I think, with the governing body, as Mr. Bellows pointed out, in terms of upgrading that service for reliability, safety, et cetera. The issue is, how do you cross the river? And I think from the board's perspective is, and I don't know how you put a dollar value on this, but certainly the vistas of crossing that bridge, I don't know how many compliments I've had from people visiting the area, that have moved to the area, that have talked about when they cross that bridge, what a beautiful view they have both east and west. And quite candidly, that view from the east will be marred if these towers are put in, particularly that height. We did get a PowerPoint presentation at the May board meeting, as Mr. Bellows pointed out. It was about 10 slides, and it did show some aerial photographs about where the footprint of the new line would go in the towers. What wasn't shown until I saw today was the diagram showing the height of the towers. And if you've been across the Norris Bridge, you know you don't get towers till you're pretty close to each county line, and they're not that much higher or close to the level of the bridge itself, the driving area. These towers, as shown on the diagram, would go considerably higher than the existing bridge. And quite candidly, the visual impact on the slides, if you look at it, the bridge looks like a little bump. I don't think people are concerned about what the towers look like from the mouth of Rappahannock or the middle of the bay. They're interested in when you're close to the bay, you live near that area, at Grays Point or on the Whitestone side, or you're crossing the bridge. And I think the board is trying to look for a compromise here where we can upgrade service, provide reliable and better service, and also protect the views and the viewshed of the Rappahannock River, whether you're living near the area, you're on the water, or you're driving across the bridge. I'm a native Virginian. I don't know how many are actually left in Virginia that are native Virginians. But, you know, we've got a lot of waterfront in this state. We have very few areas that, number one, provide public access, and, number two, provide good views of the water. I'm from the Norfolk area, and if you look at Virginia Beach, where do you see the water? When you cross the Lesner Bridge at Lynn Haven, and maybe when you get down and you can look through a few hotels on Atlantic Avenue. There are very few places you can actually cross and see a good view shed like this. And I would say probably next to the Bay Bridge Tunnel and maybe the bridge at Annapolis, this is probably one of the most, if not the next most impressive crossing in the Bay Area. And we just hope that Commission will try to find a compromise here and help protect that as well as ensure that we get improved, reliable service, which I think is everybody's goal in this project. And I'll be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Mr. Zedra.
Two questions I have. In your experience here, I mean, what is the, we heard the cost to this is going to be astronomical to put it underneath. Have there been any discussions with the residents that, you know, are they willing to pay two, three times what the electric bill is to have that kind of service provided under the water?
Well, I think, you know, the General Assembly has basically guaranteed Dominion Power a certain rate of return for the next several years. And as you know, they've taken away regulatory rate authority from the FCC for the next several years. So regardless of how much this project is going to cost, they're guaranteed a certain rate of return, period. So I'm not saying that that's a trivial amount of money, even with one of the larger utility companies in the country. But this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Once this decision is made and this project put in somehow, it's going to be there for 40, 50 years or more. So this is a rare opportunity to protect that and that viewshed and to do it one time. Now, how that cost would be amortized, you know, over many years, I don't know. I'm sure, obviously, it'll be more to go underwater. But I think the board, taking a long-term view, pardon the pun, the bridge, feels that it's a good and reasonable balance to provide that service in Northern Neck, which we agree is needed. But we also think that viewshed needs to be protected both from the bridge and from adjacent properties in the water, because it is a unique crossing, and we think it should be recognized.
My second question is, you heard the testimony concerning the repair of lines. I know myself here recently, we just had a rainstorm, and I was out of power for a day and a half, and there wasn't even any wind. And I would think that it would be a concern of the people in that area that if something happened with the line, he's talking about months to get this thing repaired as opposed to a day to get it repaired up in the air. I mean, has there been any discussion or consideration
of that? I think that's an issue, no doubt, sir. But one of the things I think needs to be done, as Mr. Bell has pointed out, is some – I'm not an engineer. And some objective third party who is an engineer needs to look at these alternatives. And they may find, to get to your point, maybe it's not viable. I don't know. But I'm not a technical person in that aspect. I can talk about the benefits of having that crossing there with an unobstructed view from a environmental tourism aspect, from a quality of life aspect, and I can testify to that. But for me to talk about something else like that, to be fair to you folks, I would be winging it, and I don't think that's fair to you.
Thank you.
But I will say that I understand that, and of course this, the Navy has a little bit more clout than Lancaster County does, obviously, that they did put a submarine or some kind of line under the York River. And of course that's because it was below the Naval Weapons Station, and the Navy had some concerns about blockage of the river. So technically it's possible. There's no doubt about it. The question is whether or not it'll be required, balancing cost versus these other issues.
Mr. Erskine.
You had mentioned that the tower structures would be considerably higher than the bridge. Is that higher than the center span superstructure? And by how much higher would that be?
I don't know. The first time I've seen these were these schematic drawings that we saw today.
Maybe that's
if I look at the different height levels, they look clearly above the bridge, much higher than. And also bear in mind, with only, quote, adding three towers, the existing towers stop well short as you get up toward the top of the bridge. So it's only three, but they are going to completely cross overhead, and I think in certain parts of the bridge, they're going to be much higher than the existing bridge. And I'm just going by what was presented to us today. I will say that, let me just add one of the lady may. One of the things we really didn't get is an artist's rendition up close and on the bridge what the towers will look like. Now, I understand they're showing a long-distance shot, but anything looks small when you're maybe several miles away from what you're looking at.
Mr. Erskine.
I could direct that question at the applicant, and they could answer that.
That would be great. Mr. Keck.
As far as the structure height, the top of the bridge is approximately 165 feet above the water, I believe it is. And the structures that we're going to put to span the navigational channel, unfortunately, the high point of the bridge and how you span is the low point of the sag. Those two structures were 179, 175 feet. So 165 versus the center, 179 on either side.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Peck.
But I think if you do cross the bridge, and I appreciate the gentleman's comments, there's no doubt as you ramp up each side, Middlesex and Lancaster, you don't see the power lines.
Okay.
And it does give you a beautiful view of the river.
Thank you, Mr. Palebo.
I'm sorry, I think...
Mr. Zedra.
Oh, what are you asking us to do?
We're asking you to approve the permit with the condition that the lines be made a underwater marina, whatever the proper terminal term would be. And it might be, like I said earlier, and I think Mr. Bell has said this, that, and it's not a criticism of your staff. I mean, there's certain things my staff can't evaluate because we just don't have the resources there. And maybe some objective third party, and I'm not saying the VMR staff isn't subjective. We work with them on local wetlands projects, and they're very good to deal with. But maybe some third party that has some engineer or marine science background can take a closer look at these alternatives. And then, you know, cost is obviously a major factor. We just think that's not the only factor.
Thank you, Mr. Plev. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there anybody else who wishes to testify with new testimony that has not been heard from the commission yet?
What are you defining as new?
Something the commission hasn't already heard. You hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Please state your name for the record, sir.
My name is Charlie Costello, and I'm a resident of Lancaster County.
Thank you, Mr. Costello.
What is new? I'll answer the question about cost. I'm a resident. I pay in Lancaster County. I will pay to have it dropped into the river and have the lines come across. I'm very much in support of this project. I'm also going to be the benefit of VETCO's or Dominion's putting lines underground. Within the next week to two, the power lines to my house will be put underground at VETCO's cost. Why? To improve the service, and the cost is the reason that they told me that they're doing this. They've got to come in 0.3 mile and so on, they'll affect other places. So they are interested when it is to help their cost line. This is going to help everybody's cost line if they put it underground, under the river. Submerged lines are being used. Connecticut yesterday opened up their submerged lines from their wind towers in the Long Island Bay, Long Island Sound. And the Secretary of Energy was there to help them and congratulate them on doing it. The technology is here. The desire is here. We need to have it underground. Thank you very
much. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Costello. Please come forward.
Mr. Wolf.
You hereby swear the testimony you give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, help you God?
I do.
Please state your name for the record.
My name is George Bott from Lancaster County. Commissioner Bull, Ms. Haney, members of the commission, Mr. Hawkinson. I'm going to try to just highlight the new, as you...
If you would, please.
...required, so it may be a little bit disjointed, but it will be less than 5 minutes. I know that when an application such as this one reaches you, it's a matter of habitat management, principally encroachment on Virginia state bottomlands and oyster leases. The total footprint was given in the application, 4,200 some odd square feet. Your staff recommends approval. We would concur with that with a caveat. One item that hadn't been mentioned is that these towers will most likely have to be lit at night. The FAA actually has jurisdiction over these towers since there's an airport just about a mile away. If you've ever been on the water at night, navigating is a little bit confusing. It's a little bit difficult. Would it make a difference to VMRC if a submerged or buried cable was used? The footprint is almost the same by my calculation for one cable, or even better by boring. The Army Corps of Engineers should like that solution. So would DCR. And you all might also approve this solution since no oyster grounds would be disturbed and no state bottom is used to be under the bottom. In fact, there'd be no impact to the Rappahannock River at all. Obviously, Lancaster County supports that solution. You got a letter from Senator McDougall, Delegates Ransom and Hodges, that endorsed the new transmission line. We need it as a backup line. But in paragraph 4 of the June 2nd letter to you all, it leaves open the method of replacing those lines, and it does not specifically endorse overhead transmission. That should be in your packet. Lastly, using overhead transmission is contrary to Dominion's plan to bury 4,000 miles of power lines that are susceptible to outages. This comes from the Daily Progress, July 23rd of this year. A Virginia law passed in April authorizes utilities to spend 5% of their total rate base to bury lines. That's $175 million in Dominion's case. They have the money. The State Corporate Commission will allow Dominion to recover any cost over time through their rates. And I'm not an engineer, but I believe over time, 10 years or so, the difference, the incremental difference between an overhead cost and a burial cost would be very small over that period of time. Respectfully, request you consider approval with a caveat that the replacement 115 kilovolt line be buried, thus eliminating the 10 towers, any impact to the Rappahannock River altogether. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Any questions from the commission? Is there anyone else in the audience wish to testify in opposition with some new information? Thank you, Ned. Do you hereby swear the testimony you give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Thank you. Please state your name for the record, ma'am.
My name is Joy Gwaltney, G-W-A-L-T-N-E-Y. I want to ask you to think for a moment about going to the Outer Banks across the causeway toward Kilmarnock. Kitty Hawk. The causeway is paralleled with a power line. Probably what I imagine is what we're talking about here. The thing is absolutely gorgeous. It is huge. It is gleaming. It's like space. It's like something from outer space. And that's what I picture is what we're talking about for the Rappahannock River. But the river crossing, the bridge itself, is a different matter. It evokes, as county manager planner said, almost a step back in time. And it evokes a coming home. I've been going to this area for most of my adult life. It is there. It is the icon that brings you in. Now, what I wanted to say, more than that being the icon, in my opinion, I've been involved with half a dozen photo contests of that area, and how do you go through hundreds and hundreds of photo submissions to become a winner. Well, I can't tell you how many times that bridge shows up. That bridge shows up with sunsets. It shows up with things in the foreground, things in the background. It is an icon of our area. Now, it's in our artwork, in our photography. It's in our literature. Now, I'm only pointing that out to you, that it is not just the need for power, but it is also maintaining that thing that evokes that icon of our area. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there anybody else? Seeing none, Mr. Keck, you get a few minutes here to rebut and or to give final thoughts.
I just wanted to cover two things and then get some others to respond to some environmental issues. There were several comparisons on putting things underground and what the State Corporation Commission recently approved. I do want to differentiate that that is for distribution lines, low voltage distribution lines, and that was approved based on storm restoration time. Over time, houses backed up to one another and there's rear lot overhead. When you try to restore power and you get back down to what we call onesie-twosies, and you got to carry a pole in somebody's backyard because you can't get through the fences and everything. Our proposal to the commission was to bury about 4,000 miles of overhead distribution lines at a maximum voltage of 35 kV, not the same as what we're talking about here. As you go up in voltage, the engineering gets more complicated. I think you know I never said this could not be done submersible. It can be done. It's been done. We've done it. But every project is different. And with this existing overhead crossing, we feel this is the best solution for the ratepayer and others. The other thing that was said about burying a cable, there are, for every circuit, there are three cables at minimum. So these, if it used the plow method or whatever method, you would have three pipes or three cables, approximately 12 to 15 feet apart. And then for Ethan, environmental, she testify and swear in.
Do you hereby swear the testimony you give here today will be the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Please state your name for the record.
Christine Conrad with Stantec Consulting Services. I believe Mr. Neely had a question about, had a question about the resources under the VMRC purview, and I just wanted to address that question for you, comparing the potential impacts for an aerial crossing versus a submersible crossing. Mr. Keck has provided all the reasons regarding reliability and safety and maintenance that Dominion feels the line should be constructed overhead. The commission obviously weighs public and private benefits of the project and considers the effects on several resources, one being other reasonable and permissible uses of state waters and state-owned bottomlands. An aerial line would have no effect on navigation. The line would abide by all regulatory clearance requirements and would actually increase navigational clearances that are currently in the river. A submerged line also would likely not have effect on navigation. There may be temporary effects due to maintenance if there is an issue within certain portions of the line, but likely no navigational effects. There would be, however, potential impacts to private oyster lease, and these areas are on the Lancaster side, whereas the aerial line is able to span these areas entirely and avoid impacts to those properties completely. For marine and fishery resources, we feel there's no impact given the time of year restrictions that have been recommended by the agencies and precautionary measures that are recommended to be incorporated into the permit. And as Jay pointed out, there's potential positive benefit post-construction for the placement of concrete structures within the river that could provide potential habitat for the benthic community and water organisms there. If you're jet plowing the line in or even directional drilling, there could obviously be some potential impact temporary to the bottom, increased turbidity and churning up of the sediments. And also with maintenance, you would have direct disturbance to river bottom in any of those areas, as Mr. Keck has pointed out. Tidal wetlands for an area completely spanned. There is no impact to tidal wetlands. We cannot say for certainty that there would be no impacts to tidal wetlands for a jet plowed line or a trench line. Those impacts would be temporary, but these are valuable resources, and we are able to span them completely and avoid all impacts to tidal wetlands with this project. For adjacent or nearby properties, the aerial crossing, there are existing structures in place, and they are already in front of the properties immediately adjacent to the line. If you were to submerge, jet plow, or trench the line in, as Dominion pointed out, there is additional construction that would need to take place to allow that to happen, either through the installation of converter stations, transition stations, or manholes in the upland areas. And there would be need to acquire land and obviously potential impacts to any resources that may be on those lands. Water quality, we expect very minor impacts during pile installation. Trenching and jet plowing would be a temporary, obviously more water quality, temporary impacts associated with that. And again, any maintenance of an underground or submerged line would require direct impact to the river bottom. And submerged aquatic vegetation, no impact. We are spanning all those areas with the project. Trenching could potentially impact up to 0.04 acres or 1,800 square feet of submerged aquatic vegetation.
Any questions? Mr. Zedra.
You put the line underneath the river. There's a break or something in the line. The question I got is, when you repair it, do you pull that line right out from underneath the water, or how's that repaired?
I believe that's the case, but that's better asked to an engineer. I'm a chemist.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Either way, whether it is a pipe-type cable that's oil-insulated, which is our traditional method, or the submarine cable, which is plowed or trenched in. You have to locate the fault with radar equipment, find it, and then send divers down. And we've had it happen recently. We took about 7 barges in the middle of the river. You lay all that pipe, which is steel pipe, that starts to look like spaghetti. If you go back far enough, you just can't pull. The worst-case scenario here is 60 feet of depth plus probably 15 feet of barrel, so 75 feet deep. You'd be pulling steel pipe up or cable up onto a barge. And the enemy of electricity is water, so you have to keep it extremely dry. You have to build a house around it on the barge to create the splices and cut out the bad section and splice it. And while you have that done, you typically do all 3 phases at that location because sending the divers down to get it, you want to take care of it at that point.
So you'd have, where it runs under these oyster leases and all the other things, you would actually be pulling that pipe right up through the ground and disturbing those leases and stuff. Is that right?
If what we call the fault or the failure is at that location, absolutely, and probably a good, depends on the depth of water, but it's not just that location. It just doesn't pop up there. You have to go out hundreds of feet in either direction to pull up the cable so you don't crimp it or bend it. Yes.
Any other questions from the commission?
I guess I have a couple questions to Virginia Power in general. What would be your response if we denied this permit?
Pardon me?
What would be Virginia VEPCO's response if this permit is denied?
It's a reliability project. I've mentioned that several times. The bridge is in disrepair. I think everybody knows that. I've had many conversations with VDOT. I hear people talk about strapping it under the bridge. Previous job of mine was all the underground in Alexandria, Roslyn, Crystal City, downtown Richmond, downtown Norfolk. All those they're trade-offs. And putting it underground sounds like a panacea. There are times when it happens, and we go that route, and there are times that we don't. This one is not one of those. We have an existing overhead crossing. We would have to step back and reevaluate our situation from a reliability standpoint. The timing of this is such that our equipment is in bad shape, and we'd have to work with VDOT in some kind of format to be able to try to extend the life of our structures, which, again, we talk to a lot of folks down here, and I come down here a lot. The bridge does get closed down. It does for traffic. It does get closed down for our work, and it gets and vice versa. We impact VDOT also. But our response would be, back to your question, would be that it would not be a good situation for reliability of the Northern Net.
And my second question is, we approved the permit with the additional safety factors that VIMS recommended, the bubble screens and the ramped up driving, even during the allowed. How much of a problem would that be for VEPCO?
It would be problematic, but at the same time, we work with those kind of restrictions all the time. We're a good corporate citizen, and we understand the need for them, and we would abide by them.
Thank you.
Mr. Ballard.
You've heard some of the objections here today. Are there any design changes you can come up with to maybe compromise and I'm thinking specifically of the height or anything, or are there reasons why you can't give a little bit to ease some of the aesthetic concerns?
Right. Well, someone mentioned earlier that when we started out the project that we had a 4-pile design, which more of a square if you were looking at it from the top down. So there were 4 piles for some of the larger structures. What we did was try to eliminate that, to eliminate the number of penetrations. So right now, you've heard 24 piles total. There are 6 structures with 2 piles, 4 structures with 3. So we work with the engineers and our vendors to come up with structures and a design such that we would eliminate the number of piles or penetrations. As far as height, we started out a little bit higher, but we are trying to work and keep Army Corps clearances and Coast Guard clearances. So it's if you try to keep those clearances, we're limited at that low sag maximum operating temperature, and we are not pushing that higher than it needs to be. We're pushing that at the minimum, at maximum operating temperature on the sag of the conductor. So height-wise, we're restricted by that. But we started out at, I'd say, when we first started talking to folks, we didn't have the detailed engineering, so we were saying approximately 200 feet. We came out a second time as I had more information and said it looks like 185, 187 would be the maximum height, and now we've got it down. Small wind, but we got it down to 179.75. Those are two tall structures in the navigational channel. Yes, sir.
Mr. France.
Yeah, I think it's important that the people of the Northern Neck know, since we have alternate ways to do this, how would it affect them as far as their electric bills and time and so on like that?
Time-wise, well, it would take a lot longer to do the project from an underground perspective. The cost is, we got to separate. It's complex when you talk about the State Corporation Commission and how we're structured with them, but you got to separate transmission costs from distribution costs. We are allowed to pass that cost on to the ratepayer, but we're beholden to the ratepayer also. So any increase, if this, let me back up, 230,000 volt lines are governed by the State Corporation Commission. This is 115,000 volt lines. So the commission does look at cost very hard. So we try to take that same mentality to look at cost. It's not the only answer at all, but it is a one of the considerations we look at. So the cost, although not the only thing, is important to us, and we try to look at it the same way the State Corporation Commission would on a 230 or 500 kV line.
Thank you. Any other questions from the commission? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Keck. The public hearing is closed, and the matter is before the commission for discussion and action. Before we get into that, Jay, would you come back and go over the staff recommendation one more time to refresh our memories on what the staff is recommending?
Yes. We are recommending approval of the project contingent upon a time of year restriction from February 15th to June 30th of any year to protect anadromous fish species that would preclude any pile driving. Not any construction activity, but pile driving specifically. We are recommending adoption of the ramp-up technology as offered by VEPCO. I don't have a full description of what that would be, how many times you hit it, and how many decibels, but there is such a thing. And that we recommend a bubble curtain be used around each piling at any time for the shallow water towers.
Thank you, Mr. Woodward.
And the Falcon.
Right.
The marine resource of the Peregrine Falcon.
The matters before this commission for discussion and action. What do you all want to do?
Yes, I have a procedural question. I don't know if it's a legal question or it's a staff question. We have an application for these overhead lines. So that's the application before us.
Correct.
And I know we can modify things, but it's my guess is we can approve this or we can deny it, but I don't know if we approved it. What they want us to do, what the objectors want us to do, is to approve it but require them to go underground. We don't have an application for that.
Correct.
So I don't see that we – I guess I'm trying to be a lawyer here, which I'm not. I don't know that we have the authority to do that. We could – I don't know. So it seems to me we're either going to approve it or we deny it. Am I being an idiot? It's a question. Be gentle.
Always.
That's a good question. That's before the court.
Mr. Neal, I would offer my non-lawyer advice on this is that I think that you got it right. We have an application before us here to have the commission require extensive modifications to this would basically send this back to the drawing board for all sorts of new environmental engineering and environmental impacts to the water bottom. And as we heard, with directional drilling or a trench method, there would be some substantial issues to deal with sediment and impacts on marine species. So I guess to that degree, it is within some limited reason kind of an all or nothing thing with this application. I think that there might be a few things that we can do tinkering with the basic concept of this, but not a wholesale redrawing of this project from the ground level. That's my gut impression. Mr. Paul may have a better idea.
I'll say for what it's worth here that what the application is for a permit to encroach over state-owned bottom. Exactly how that's done is not really, it's obviously a part of the permit and it's a condition of the permit, but it could be changed. And, you know, the application, I think the proposed way it's going to encroach is not necessarily binding, so it could encroach in a different way. However, I think when you're talking about submerging the line and you're having different impacts than the project that's actually proposed in the application, it would require further evaluation before we could actually approve it on the staff level, I would think. So I do think I would agree with the commissioner that it's not something that we could permit today if that's the approach that we wanted to take.
Mr. Zedrin.
I would concur with both of you because I would look at this as a substantial modification in the application, which would both be costly and have additional environmental impacts which have not been studied. From my perspective, I think we need to look at the public in general. As I told you a minute ago, I don't think anybody likes to be without power. And so it's not just the people who live on the river. It's the people who live in the county. And so, you know, the question is this a needed line? And I think the VEPCO people are saying, hey, this is a reliability deal here. You know, this is an old line. We want to get to it before it falls down and provide all the citizens in these counties with reliable power. We also want to do it in a fashion that if power is terminated, that they can fix it real quickly. They also want to do it safely. We, as commissioners, I think we look at our staff, and this is a very complicated project, and they have talked to BIMS, and the Corps of Engineers is involved, and the Coast Guard, and all these people are involved that are supporting this project. And I understand the citizens on their view, I'm talking about the visual aspects of this project, but when I look at that bridge, that old bridge, you know what I see? I see a bunch of Creole telephone poles in the water that's contaminating the water. And the metal structure, the concrete structures, they will take and actually improve the environment over there because of the oysters and the other aquatic creatures that can attach to the concrete. And we're listening to our people over here, and they're saying, hey, that's a good thing. You know, I don't see anything attached to creosote poles in the ground. And you already have a line there. I think if we were talking about you didn't have a line, then I think maybe I would vote to table this matter and go back to the citizens and let them talk about, you know, what you should do. But here's a line that VEPCO's saying, hey, you know, this thing's coming down sometime, and we want to improve it, and there's some modifications, just like the gentleman here talked about the height. I mean, that was a question here. And because of the sag in the line and so forth like that, they've come down as low as they can. And so, you know, looking at the totality of circumstances, they have tried to address the public concerns about the view of the bridge and the beauty of the river and everything. But we got to look at, well, we're dealing with this bottom, and really we've got to come down to what our jurisdiction is all about. It's not the sky. It's not the view, it's the subaquitaneous land down there. And what I'm hearing is this structures will improve the environment because they take out the creosote poles. Really no impact to the environment other than what they're doing for construction. And that's what our people are recommending, approval, and say, hey, look, we've got some issues here with when these certain fish or creatures are going to be in the water, they can't build then. And so we're protecting our obligation to follow our staff's recommendations, so you can't construct during this period of time. You're going to lower your footprint a little bit. You're going to have a better condition there versus those concrete piles. So I'm going to vote to approve our staff recommendations with their changes.
Any other discussion from the commission? Mr. Erskine.
So I appreciate all the public input and the applicant's wish to revamp this line. And I'm familiar with the area as a resident of Lancaster County and understand that the structures that exist there, are going to be, if not needed now, in need of repair. I do agree with some of the comments that if we were to deny this application or modify it to do some kind of submerged placement, that seems like a completely different application, in my opinion. I think staff would want an opportunity to look at some of those environmental impacts. I think the applicant's done a fairly good job minimizing the environmental impacts, and I understand the opposition is more or less an aesthetic issue, and that is taken into consideration, I think, with this commission. It's obviously a complex issue, but I would, like Mr. Zedron, be in support of this as proposed as staff recommendation. I do have one question maybe of staff, and that is, even in the deeper water, would you not prefer or would it not be beneficial to have that bubble curtain as well? It might be less effective, but does it provide any added buffer for the aquatic resources?
I think I'm going to ask Beth Dims to add to my reply, but it's my understanding that as you get deeper and as the currents sweep the bubbles away, you just lose the effectiveness of the bubble curtain technology. But that's a very general perspective on it, and I would ask that Vims might address that in a little more detail to let you know as to why it may or may not work in the deeper water.
Mr. Vernell, you've been sworn in.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Paul Vernell, Virginia Institute of Marine Science. Mr. Wilkinson is correct. We felt, based on the studies, Vims has never done the study of this. We're just reporting on other studies, mainly engineering, that the deeper the water, the less effective. There is a linear relationship with that. Of course, you could always apply this and hope for the best. There are additional burdens and time and investment into that. But we felt, from the perspective of the resource, that those would just be ineffective. A lot of the impact is from the bottom, not just in the water column. Pounding goes to the bottom and resonates out, and that's where a lot of the effect is. Bubble curtains do not really address that part of this, which is why we felt that the time of year restrictions were especially important in this case, because there's very few alternatives other than that.
Thank you.
Any other discussion from the commission? Well, the commission operates on motions.
We would approve the recommendation of staff stated.
The modified recommendation of staff. That's a motion by Mr. Zedron to accept the modified recommendation of staff. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Miner. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any noes? Any abstentions? Ms. Haney abstained. The chair votes aye as well. This project is approved. I want to thank everybody who came out today. I appreciate your passion for this issue and your civility in particular. Thank you all.